So, which way do you want to go?
I don't know, he admitted. She tipped her head on one side, a perfectly feline gesture. Suddenly, Shadow knew exactly who she was and where he knew her from. He felt himself beginning to blush.
If you trust me,
said Bast,
I can choose for you.
I trust you.
Do you want to know what it's going to cost you?
I've already lost my name.
Names come and names go. Was it worth it?
Yes, maybe. It wasn't easy. As revelations go, it was kind of personal.
All revelations are personal. That's why all revelations are suspect.
I don't understand.
No, you don't. I'll take your heart. We'll need it later.
And she reached her hand deep inside his chest, and she pulled it out with something ruby and pulsing held between her sharp fingernails. It was the color of pigeon's blood, and it was made of pure light. Rhythmically, it expanded and contracted. She closed her hand, and it was gone.
Take the middle way.
Shadow hesitated.
Are you really here?
She tipped her head on one side, regarded him gravely, said nothing at all.
What are you? What are you people?
She yawned, showing a perfect dark pink tongue.
Think of us as symbols. We're the dream that humanity creates to make sense of the shadows on the cave wall. Now go on, keep moving. Your body is already growing cold. The fools are gathering on the mountain. The clock is ticking.
Shadow nodded and walked on. The path was becoming slippery now. There was ice on the rock. Shadow stumbled and skidded as he walked down the rock path toward the place where it divided, scraping his knuckles on a jut of rock at chest height. He edged forward as slowly as he could. The moon above him glittered through the ice crystals in the air. There was a ring about the moon, a moon bow, diffusing the light. It was beautiful, but it made walking harder. The path was unreliable. He reached the place where the path divided. He looked at the first path with a feeling of recognition. It opened into a vast chamber, or a set of chambers, like a dark museum. He knew it already. He had been there once, although for several moments he was unable to remember where or when. He could hear the long echoes of tiny noises. He could hear the noise that the dust makes as it settles. It was the place that he had dreamed of that first night that Laura had come to him in the motel so long ago. The endless memorial hall to the gods that were forgotten, and the ones whose very existence had been lost. He took a step backward. He walked to the path on the far side and looked ahead. There was a Disneyland quality to the corridor, black plexiglass walls with lights set in them. The colored lights blinked and flashed in the illusion of order for no particular reason, like the console lights on a television starship. He could hear something there as well, a deep vibrating bass drone which Shadow could feel in the pit of his stomach. He stopped and looked around. Neither way seemed right. Not any longer. He was done with paths. The middle way, the way the Catwoman had told him to walk, that was his way. He moved toward it. The moon above him was beginning to fade. The edge of it was pinking and going into eclipse. The path was framed by a huge doorway. There were no deals to make anymore, no more bargains. There was nothing to do but enter. So Shadow walked through the doorway in darkness. The air was warm, and it smelled of wet dust like a city street after the summer's first rain. He was not afraid. Not anymore. Fear had died on the tree, a shadow had died. There was no fear left, no hatred, no pain. Nothing left but essence. Something big splashed quietly in the distance, and the splash echoed into the vastness. He squinted, but could see nothing. It was too dark. And then, from the direction of the splashes, a ghost light glimmered and the world took form. He was in a cavern, and in front of him, mirror smooth, was water. The splashing noises came closer and the light became brighter, and Shadow waited on the shore. Soon enough, a low, flat boat came into sight, a flickering white lantern burning at its raised prow, another reflected in the glassy black water several feet below it. The boat was being pulled by a tall figure, and the splashing noise Shadow had heard was the sound of the pole being lifted and moved as it pushed the craft across the waters of the underground lake.
"Hello there!"
Echoes of his words suddenly surrounded him. He could imagine that a whole chorus of people were welcoming him and calling to him, and each of them had his voice. The person pulling the boat made no reply. The boat's pilot was tall and very thin. He, if it was a he, wore an unadorned white robe, and the pale head that topped it was so utterly inhuman that Shadow was certain that it had to be a mask of some sort. It was a bird's head, small on a long neck, its beak long and high. Shadow was certain he had seen it before, this ghostly bird-like figure. He grasped at the memory and then, disappointed, realized that he was picturing the clockwork penny in the slot machine in the house on the rock, and the pale, bird-like, half-glimpsed figure that glided out from behind the crypt for the drunkard's soul. Water dripped and echoed from the pole and the prow, and the ship's wake rippled the glassy waters. The boat was made of reeds, bound and tied. The boat came close to the shore. The pilot leaned on its pole. Its head turned slowly until it was facing Shadow.
"Hello,"
it said, without moving its long beak. The voice was male, and like everything else in Shadow's afterlife, so far, familiar.
"Come on board. You'll get your feet wet, I'm afraid, but there's not a thing can be done about that. These are old boats, and if I come in closer, I could rip out the bottom."
Shadow took off the shoes he had not been aware he was wearing and stepped out into the water. It came halfway up his calves and was, after the initial shock of wetness, surprisingly warm. He reached the boat, and the pilot put down a hand and pulled him aboard. The reed boat rocked a little, and water splashed over the low sides of it, and then it steadied. The pilot pulled off away from the shore. Shadow stood there and watched, his pants legs dripping.
"I know you,"
he said to the creature at the prow.
"You do indeed."
The oil lamp which hung at the front of the boat burned more fitfully, and the smoke from the lamp made Shadow cough.
"You worked for me. I'm afraid we had to inter Lila Goodchild without you."
The voice was fussy and precise. The smoke stung Shadow's eyes. He wiped the tears away with his hand, and through the smoke he thought he saw a tall man in a suit with gold-rimmed spectacles. The smoke cleared, and the boatman was once more a half-human creature with the head of a river bird.
"Mr. Ibis?"
"Good to see you, Shadow,"
said the creature with Mr. Ibis's voice.
"Do you know what a psychopomp is?"
Shadow thought he knew the word, but it had been a long time. He shook his head.
"It's a fancy term for an escort. We all have so many functions, so many ways of existing. In my own vision of myself, I am a scholar who lives quietly and pens his little tales and dreams about a past that may or may not ever have existed. And that is true as far as it goes. But I am also, in one of my capacities, like so many of the people you have chosen to associate with, a psychopomp. I escort the living to the world of the dead."
"I thought this was the world of the dead."
"No, not per se. It's more of a preliminary."
The boat slipped and slid across the mirror surface of the underground pool. The bird head of the creature at the prow stared ahead. And then Mr. Ibis said, without moving its beak,
"You people talk about the living and the dead as if they were two mutually exclusive categories. As if you cannot have a river that is also a road, or a song that is also a color."
"You can't. Can you?"
The echoes whispered his words back at him from across the pool.
"What you have to remember is that life and death are different sides of the same coin, like the heads and tails of a quarter."
"And if I had a double-headed quarter?"
"You don't. They only belong to fools and gods."
Shadow had a frisson then, as they crossed the dark water. He imagined he could see the faces of children staring up at him reproachfully from beneath the water's glassy surface. Their faces were waterlogged and softened, their blind eyes clouded. There was no wind in that underground cavern to disturb the black surface of the lake.
"So, I'm dead."
He was getting used to the idea.
or I'm going to be dead.
We are on our way to the Hall of the Dead. I requested that I be the one to come for you.
Why?
I'm a psychopomp. I like you. You are a hard worker. Why not?
Because I never believed in you.